2022 was a system reboot. 2023 broke the doom loop. This year is all about turning vision into reality. Conference to Restore Humanity 2024 is an invitation for K-12 and college educators to build your joyful, reimagined classroom. Our conference is designed around the accessibility and sustainability of virtual learning, while engaging participants in an environment that models the same progressive pedagogy we value with students. Instead of long Zoom presentations with a brief Q&A, our flipped keynotes let the learning community listen and learn on their own time, then engage in a one-hour Q&A with our speakers. Dr. Mary Helen Immordino Yang makes the neurobiological case for progressive education rooted in her groundbreaking work in affective neuroscience. Dr. Carla Shalaby demonstrates the power of education as the practice of freedom, honoring young people's rights to full human being. Dr. Sausan Jaber elevates the voices of Arab and Muslim students as an advocate for global equity and justice. And Orchard View School's Innovative Learning Center showcases healthy, sustainable community learning spaces for teenagers and adult learners alike. Beyond our flipped keynotes, participants will be invited to join week-long learning journeys. Join Trevor Alio on a journey to learn interdisciplinary, inquiry-based methods to equip students as knowledge producers, communicating with zines, podcasts, and more. And understand the ripple effects of modern imperialism with a focus on Palestinian resilience and classroom tools for fostering global solidarity in our second workshop led by Abir Ramadan Shenawi. We're also featuring virtual school tours so you can see progressive practice in action at the Nova Lab, Olentangy STEM Academy, Community Lab School, and more. The mission of reshaping education systems, of turning vision into reality, is vital for a sustainable and just future. Conference to Restore Humanity runs July 22nd through the 25th, and as of recording, early bird tickets are still available. It's $150 for 4 days, with discounts available, group rates, and parity pricing. Plus, we'll award certificates for teacher training and continuing education credits. See our website, humanrestorationproject.org, for more information, and let's restore humanity together. Hello and welcome to episode 148 of the Human Restoration Project podcast. My name is Nick Covington. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that this episode is brought to you by our supporters, three of whom are John O'Brien, Timothy Fox, and Leah Kelly. You can learn more about Human Restoration Project on our website, humanrestorationproject.org, and connect with us everywhere on social media. There aren't more contentious topics in modern education than those related to LGBTQ gender and sexuality, race and sex education. When you include the push in many states to implement and expand so-called school choice programs and laws framed around the post-2020 parents' rights movement, you quickly realize this suite of issues almost entirely dominates education journalism and discourse. But how much do we actually know about what Americans, and which Americans, believe about these issues, about the purpose of education itself? And how can we use this understanding to improve public conversations and policymaking around potentially contentious topics? My guests today are the lead authors of Just Such a Report, based on extensive surveys completed in the fall of 2023, and whose results were publicly released in February of this year.
Hi, I'm Morgan Polakoff. I'm a professor of education at the USC Rosser School of Education.
Hi, I'm Anna Saavedra. I'm a research scientist at the Dornsaf School of Arts and Letters within USC.
Well, thank you so much both for your work and for joining me today to dive into these results.
My pleasure.
Happy to be here.
So for the listeners, the report, Searching for Common Ground, Widespread Support for Public Schools, but Substantial Partisan Divides About Teaching Contested Topics, is available online, and you can find a link in the show notes if you'd like to pull it up and follow along. Now, Anna and Morgan, let's just talk a bit about the methodology before you get into the results, because both of your research interests and expertise lies in conducting and making sense of this kind of survey research. Could you explain how you conducted the survey, why this work is important for informing and guiding education policymaking and discourse?
My research center at USC, the Center for Economic and Social Research, has been surveying the same households over time, now about 13,000, since 2014. So this is called a longitudinal sample, where you repeatedly survey the same households over time. The survey sample is nationally representative, meaning that we have a sample that we're drawing data from. It's not the entire United States, but we can draw conclusions about how the U.S. population would respond similarly to similar questions. For our particular survey that we're going to share, that talk about the results of, we surveyed 4,000 adults from households representative of the United States. Half of them have a K-12 child living in the household and half don't. We are going to talk about results overall across the 4,000 adults. We also broke down our results for our report, focusing on differences in partisanship. So for our sample, 40% are Democrat or leaning Democrat. It was 34% Republican or leaning Republican and 27% other political affiliations, so independents or libertarians or Green Party or others. There are many other ways to look at the data, but that's the way that we focus on in the report that you referenced.
Let's go ahead and talk about the elements that you asked about in the survey based on the demographics that you talked about and the results, or I guess not the results, but the responses that you were looking for. What were those elements that you asked about in the survey, and how and why did your team decide on these topics at this point in time?
We asked about purposes of education. So we asked adults, you know, we listed 12 different potential purposes of education. We asked them to tell us how important they thought each of the 12 purposes of education are. We also asked some questions designed to understand adults' beliefs about public education compared to private education, some of the underlying beliefs behind school choice. Then we wanted to learn adults' views about the appropriateness of teaching topics related to LGBTQ, race, and sex education in elementary and high school classrooms. And we wanted to understand what do adults think is the appropriate role of parents regarding what their children are learning in school.
And we settled on these questions. So we had done a similar study just a little over a year ago in fall of 2022 and asked some similar topics. So we asked about curriculum-related topics, for instance, related to LGBT and race issues and other curriculum topics. But we really wanted to go much deeper this time. So we asked many more scenarios and more detailed scenarios. And then I think just generally, we're a team that pays a lot of attention to what's going on in the education policy space right now. And, you know, clearly school choice is a major issue right now in a lot of red states. And then these issues related to views on the purposes of education, we thought were just highly salient to this topic of, you know, what people want schools to be doing, right? And we know that there's a sense that people's views on the purposes of education, both K-12 and frankly higher ed, are sort of changing right now, that there's some inflection post-COVID. And so that was how we came up with the broad buckets for this survey.
That's excellent insight there. I think thinking about the collection of those results then, when you got the results back and you began the analysis that eventually becomes this report, what results or patterns emerged that surprised or shocked you? Were there any results that seemed counterintuitive to any narratives or challenging to those narratives? And what ones perhaps confirmed any theses that you may have had about how those pieces would come together in the long run?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's tons of findings in the report, and there's also tons of findings that we didn't report and are planning to roll out and continue to analyze, cut the data in different ways. But let me just say a couple of the things that stood out to me that were surprising. So one was in terms of views on school choice, right? People tend to think of school choice as a Republican issue. It's happening primarily in Republican states that are passing vouchers and ESA bills. And we asked a question where we asked people, you know, how they think money should be spent, whether giving school choice opportunities to low-income families or whether improving local public schools. And overwhelmingly, both Republicans and Democrats expressed support for using that money to improve local public schools. And I would say I was surprised at the strength of that support, because there's a lot of public opinion data on school choice. I think people want to think that school choice is a particularly partisan issue, but and I think it is in terms of partisan elites and policymakers, but in terms of what actual people think about improving schools, people really want to improve their local public schools. That is a very popular position, and I was surprised at the level of partisan agreement on that. We also found a lot of partisan agreement on most of the purposes of education that we asked about. So for instance, the number one, you know, top issue for both Democrats and Republicans was basically teaching kids the basics, reading, writing, and math. And across essentially every purpose that we asked about, really except for one, there was pretty good partisan agreement. The one issue where we really did see a pretty big partisan agreement separating Republicans and Democrats was on teaching children the importance of embracing differences, where Democrats were much more supportive of that as a purpose of education than Republicans were. But those are two things that to me really stuck out as pretty surprising. And I don't know if there was anything that you want to say in terms of things that were surprising or things that maybe confirmed what we already learned last year.
I agree that the most surprising but also optimistic result is that shared support for public schools. And it's a common starting point, right? We did find a lot of areas of disagreement or difference between Democrats and Republicans in terms of the content that they think children should be learning at elementary and high school, in terms of, you know, these issues of race, LGBT, and sex ed. But that common ground and support for public schools is a great place to start from. One thing that I found really useful was we asked questions designed to understand a little bit more about where these differences might be coming from. So we found, for example, Morgan gave the example of, you know, three quarters of Democrats think that a very important purpose of education is teaching students to embrace difference, compared to one third of Republicans. But we also found, for example, that there's a much greater proportion of Republicans are worried that their children learning about racial inequality is going to make them feel guilty. That's really not a major concern among Democrats. We found some other sort of explanations that seemed helpful, like much greater percentages of Republicans are worried that learning about being gay or being trans will actually like make students be gay or trans, whereas that is a much lesser concern among Democrats. We found several others of these differences, but I do think that understanding these differences in conjunction with having this great support for public education is like a way forward. You know, we all have support for public schools. Let's learn about each other's differences and maybe we can come to some sort of consensus. You know, another thing that I found pretty sort of helpful and a little bit, well, concerning also, is that when there's disagreement between adults and what kids should be learning in school, there's also disagreement on how to reconcile that disagreement. And that's sort of like, you know, we need to figure out some process here. I thought that those results kind of together are saying, look, we support public schools. We have some differences. Let's try and understand those differences and come to some sort of processes that we can all agree on to come to some kind of consensus.
You all pointed to the three things that I pulled out of there, too, that just stood out like in, you know, with blinders on, with blinkers on here, which the first one is like that 39-point gap, right, between the Democratic support. It's interesting because we don't generally talk like in these explicitly partisan terms about education, at least in this context for this podcast. So it's kind of interesting to bring that perspective into this. But that 39-point gap in agreement on teaching children the importance of embracing differences, it was, I think, 74% of Democrats agreed compared to just over a third of Republicans, something like 35 there. Such a striking difference. While at the same time, you know, you pointed out that on that item about money should go to public schools to improve them, I was really shocked again at how high that bipartisan consensus really was. You know, 63 or 67% of Republicans agreed with that, where, you know, Morgan was just talking about that has largely been a Republican-driven issue in these state legislatures, Republican-dominated states passing these school choice bills. It kind of seems a little bit counterintuitive that those things would kind of be the case. While at the same time, then, I think to dive into the more contentious topics, perhaps we can start to look at that. Now, You performed a similar survey in 2022. Were there things that you asked that were different then, or were there any notable similarities and differences that you found between each of these years' results, I suppose, before we dive into the contentious topics?
Yeah, so the general approach was the same between the 2 years, where we asked about people's views on, in 2022, we asked about controversial topics. So everything was about topics. And this time we asked about scenarios, because some of the scenarios aren't specifically topics that you would cover in a curriculum. So that's one small difference. But we asked about it separately for elementary and secondary, because we know that people have very different views on these issues, whether you're talking about young children or older children. And we certainly had found that in 2022. And then we asked just much more detailed scenarios this time. So last time we asked about, you know, when we asked about topics, the top, an example of a topic might just be like gay rights, right? So that is a very general topic. And really, we want to understand, well, where are people comfortable and not comfortable? Because the specific scenarios that come up, those are what people are talking about, right? Whether it's, you know, trans girls on girls' sports teams, or whether it's a pride flag in a classroom, or whether it's talking about slavery as the cause of the Civil War, right? These are very specific scenarios. And we really wanted to understand Americans' views on these very specific scenarios. So we crafted a range of scenarios for LGBT issues, for race-related issues, and for sex education issues that we thought sort of varied in terms of their difficulty, meaning that some we thought most people would agree with and some we thought most people would not agree with, so that we could really figure out for each person where on this continuum of support they will be located. So that was our sort of strategy. And actually, I think we ended up doing a really nice job of differentiating along this continuum of support, and highlighting also, again, how it differs for Republicans and Democrats and how it differs for elementary school and high school.
Well, let's get into some of the more specific scenarios that we've alluded to here. And I'll read some more of the language of the report specifically, just for the benefit of listeners who may not be following along. So I hope that's okay. And then I'll come back around here to just asking, I guess, where we go from here. But I think as I dove more into the specific topics, two of those outcomes that were, again, more striking to me, even if I felt like they weren't surprising, one was the partisan breakdown that was included right at the beginning of the executive summary that said, agreeing LGBTQ classroom scenarios are appropriate in public high schools as opposed to, say, elementary school. So these are topics that would be broached with like 14 to 8-year-olds. You found nearly unanimous bipartisan agreement on teaching why being kind to others matters, standing up for others, an opposite sex love story, for example. But for the other 21 scenarios on the LGBTQ scenarios front, Republican responses are underwater, below 50%, including discussing same-sex marriage rights, again, in a high school setting, the teacher's same-sex spouse picture on the desk, and the divide only gets worse for topics impacting transgender identities, where the overall percentage of adults dips below 50% bipartisan agreement. As you had mentioned too, Anna, later in the report, you included a chart that showed 55% of Republicans agreed with the statement, learning about gay people might make children gay, and 66% agreed that learning about transgender people might make children transgender. The last part here, the other one is from teaching about the racial inequality, where the subheader, I think, for the section reads, Republicans do not support students in elementary or high school learning about racial inequality. And the report reads, the scenario with the least support from Republicans, that's only 36% agreed with it, is the one most directly related to high school students, a math project where students studied national data on how often different races get sent to the principal's office. So I guess I'm wondering, where do we go from here, right? How do we get past this contention and this conflict? And what way forward do you imagine that this survey illuminates for us? Because I get the sense that those are sort of hopeless divides here in terms of teaching about LGBTQ issues and identities and teaching about racial inequality. But what path forward does the report chart in your estimation?
Well, I think that we start with this bipartisan high, strong support for public education. and we say, okay, we all want to invest and support public schools. And then we say, wow, we have these big differences in what we think the children should be learning at both elementary and high school level. And we don't really do a great job of arbitrating our disagreements. Like, we need to improve our processes. And this is most likely in just about every district around the country, all of which are purple to some extent, even if it's a vast majority Republican or a vast majority Democrat. You know, we have disagreement within communities and we don't seem to have great ways to reconcile the disagreement. So we need to come up with processes. And they're really some of the, going back to the basics of democracy, some of the tools that we have for democracy at the national level. You know, we need to be developing those processes at the local level as well. We need to be listening to each other, understanding each other, and then using some of the tools we have, you know, at our disposal. Like, there's commitment to coming to compromise, understanding that not everyone is going to have every one of their needs met, public panel deliberation, citizen advisory groups, provisions for dissents, you know, understanding that we're all in it together. Most people, you know, if you want to stay in your community, you want to commit to having productive conversations with the people in your community. You know, there was an article, I think it was over the weekend, about a conversation last week as part of National Civic Learning Week between two of the justices about the fact that the Supreme Court justices, it's a position for life. You know, they have a lot of disagreements among them, but they also have some really, really strong norms about how they should be communicating with each other. And I think that there's, you know, some lessons to learn from the justices in terms of, you know, we might have a lot of disagreements about some of their decisions, but maybe they have some processes we can all learn from.
I think all that I would add additional emphasis to what Anna said, right? Ultimately, what it comes down to, curriculum is, for better or for worse, a local issue and a state issue. And I think states need to put out guidance for how these issues are to be addressed in, you know, in age-appropriate ways across the continuum. I think locals need to have similar discussions about how they're going to implement these kinds of issues. And we're not all going to agree. As Anna says, every district is purple. I think there, you know, there needs to be guardrails. And I frankly, I'm not wild about the idea, but there also needs to be opportunities for parents who disagree with the way particular topics are going to be presented to have the opportunity to both express their disagreement, and also if they really don't want their kid learning something, there needs to be some kind of release valve. And I don't think we want kids opting out of lots of lessons. I think that's a logistical nightmare, and I think it's bad for democracy. But I also think that, you know, for some people, there are non-negotiable things they do or don't want their child to hear. And we, you know, we have to respect that to some extent. And so I really think it means coming up with specific policies and strategies, models that can work in red states and blue states and purple states. And that's really the path forward.
Perhaps to build off of that too, and just kind of look ahead a little bit further. I know it's difficult just because obviously, I mean, you guys are researchers, not policymakers. So it's hard to ask like how you envision these results being used. Are there areas though that your insight can be valuable on as far as the areas of you see of greatest compromise, the biggest levers that we have to bring people together to be able to do that? Perhaps yes, on the agreement that our public schools are good and valuable and we need to spend money on them. But then when we get into the nitty gritty of how do we actually, what do we teach in there and how do we do that? Are there areas of compromise that you see being powerful levers for that? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that there are clear differences across grade level here. And I think one thing that our report does very nicely is really gets into the details of what people are supportive of and opposed to at elementary and secondary. And the story is very, very different, right? So at secondary school, I would say the general, you know, 30,000 foot takeaway is people want potentially difficult issues to be covered in secondary school. What they don't want is they don't want teachers pushing a particular ideology on children. And so that means coming at fraught topics from multiple perspectives, critically analyzing data, giving students the abilities to come to their own conclusions about potentially fraught issues. And that's how I read the secondary school results. And there's there are lots of surveys that come to the same general conclusion. There was one, I think, from EdChoice that came out last week that had very similar results, where they actually directly asked a question. And the conclusion was basically people are very concerned about teachers pushing particular ideologies on children. And so I think that is, we could just accept that as a finding now, right? That we found it in both of our waves of the survey. It's been found in other surveys as well. So people want secondary schools to be a place where these issues are discussed. For elementary schools, I think broadly, people don't want elementary school kids exposed to potentially difficult topics. I think they pretty much think that for little kids, leave those issues at home and have the school focus on the basics. And we as educators might think, oh, that's not really reasonable, or, you know, kids are going to ask questions or things like that. But people do have concerns about age appropriateness. And that certainly is true on the LGBT issues, where even on most of those issues, Democrats aren't supportive of them being addressed. But even on the racial issues, right, like getting into complex things about the causes of racial inequality for a 9-year-old, I think a lot of people would say, you know, that's probably a little bit young for that kind of conversation. And let's have that when they're a few years older and they can engage in more complex reasoning. So I think that grade level difference is really important. And we found that across both our surveys now.
I would say, building on what Morgan said, and this isn't as much from our survey as some of the other surveys that have been out there around the same time. There have been surveys of teachers showing how hard all this disagreement has been on teachers. You know, they have fear about what they're teaching, but they also need support. There are resources out there that can show teachers and provide them with the tools that they need to really foster open discussion in a way that is welcoming of different perspectives from the kids, not indoctrinating. It's a skill to be able to facilitate a conversation about a potentially contested topic. And so teachers need those supports, and they are out there and they exist. And that's, you know, I think that's an important sort of point to take away. You know, I think the other point is just we should all be looking at ourselves and asking how can we contribute more productively to the conversations going on in our own towns about what's, you know, happening in our local public. Because we can start by pointing fingers at others, or we can start by improving what we're doing ourselves.
To have your survey and the information that it reveals just added as a supplement, as a complement to the other, you know, array of perspectives and data that's out there too. I think.
Can I actually add one more?
Of course.
Yes. We've also been analyzing the data in other ways for things that haven't yet been published. And I will say that this report focuses on partisan differences between Democrats and Republicans. Another way to slice the same data is to focus on differences based on the partisan breakdown of where people live, right? Because you live in a congressional district that has a particular breakdown. And so we've also done that. And the gaps are much smaller between quote unquote red places and blue places than they are between Democrats and Republicans. And that should make some sense, because even red places are still usually 30% Democrat or something like that. And so even on things like the slavery is the cause of the Civil War, there might be some big gap between red places and blue places. There really is not. And on a lot of the items, these gaps look much smaller when you analyze them sort of geographically. So I think there's also a little bit of a disconnect between, and actually I think this is true on both the left and the right, between what policymakers would like to push into schools and what the actual makeup of a particular school district, you know, if you were to poll all the parents in the school district, what they would want for their kids on average, right? Because policymakers represent one party. Unfortunately, this is kind of the way it works these days. Policymakers represent one party rather than representing all of the people who are in their district, whether they're blue or red. And so I think that's another important thing, is that this report, which emphasizes the partisan gaps between Democrats and Republicans, makes them look very large, but there are other ways of analyzing the data that in some ways I think are more reflective of the ways that we actually structure schools, that point out that actually these gaps aren't quite as large, and there are more areas of common ground.
Are there any other ways that, I guess I'm kind of excited about that angle of things here, are there other ways that you're both parsing out that the massive pile of data that you've gotten from all of these participants that you're excited to look forward to, be they by congressional district or other perspectives for future reports and releases?
So I can name a couple. So one is we're currently working on finalizing a, so we actually did a thing where we embedded an experimental manipulation in the survey where we gave people some information about the potential downsides of opting kids out of a lesson that you disagree with. So we gave half the people that, and we gave the other half of the people not that description. And we found that just that description of the potential downsides really substantially reduced people's intended support for opting kids out of a lesson with content they disagree with. I want to say it was like a 14% or a 16%.
15 percentage points or 25%. So it was from a 57% support rate to a 42% support rate.
And that effect was equally large for Democrats and Republicans, right? So that so that's one finding. It, that's actually in the report already, but we're gonna turn that into an article, I think. Another breakdown that I would say that I find quite interesting, and to me actually is a little bit counterintuitive, is the parent non-parent split. So as Anna said, about half the sample's parents and about half the sample's non-parents, and I was a little bit surprised that actually on most of the potentially controversial topics, the parents are actually less supportive than the non-parents of those topics being covered in schools. That was, I'm not a parent, but that was a little bit counterintuitive to me. And I think that, I think there's two reactions to that. One is there's an argument out there that, oh, this is all being driven by outside agitators or something like that. I don't think that's really true. I certainly think there's some of that, but that's not the main thing. And the other is, you know, I think parents really are thinking about what do they want to be their domain and what do they want to be the school's domain. And I think that, you know, we don't want to demonize parents. Parenting is hard. We should respect parents' opinions about what is their area and what is the school's area to some, you know, to the extent that we can. And so that parent non-parent split, I think, is also pretty interesting. But the great thing about the UAS is because we've been surveying these people for a very long time, we have all kinds of demographics and we know everything about these people, their education levels, their incomes, you know, as I said, where they're located, and their certainly their race, ethnicity. So we can do lots of these different kinds of analyses. If your readers have an idea, or your readers, your listeners have an idea of particular things they're interested in, you know, we can always do more.
That reminds me that we have a lot of people to thank for this work. You know, we're representing a big team, but we also always really like to thank our UAS respondents because obviously we couldn't do any of this without them.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I think just with an eye on time, is there a way that you imagine these results being used or a way that, you know, they're out there in the wild for the public, for policymakers, for people to look at? Is there a particular use case that you had imagined for these? And then is there just anything else that in the course of our short conversation didn't get mentioned that you would think, hey, I'd be remiss if I didn't enter this into the record?
I think there's a bunch of ways that Morgan and I would like to, and our team would like to move forward with all the results. You know, we expect that we'll be speaking about them to different audiences through the year and maybe in coming years. You know, I spoke to the local high school kids and teachers about these results 2 weeks ago and to our local principals and district staff last week. And, you know, they prompted really helpful discussions and not just between me and them, but amongst sort of amongst the principals in the town. There were 17 in that leadership meeting. There's a lot of different audiences that might respond in different sorts of ways. We hope that this will raise attention for funders, for example. You know, there's ways that funders could be interested in different parts of the report and maybe want to learn more about different parts of our results. You know, the Hewlett Foundation funded our work last year and this year. We're very grateful for that support. Morgan and I are going to be presenting to a big group of funders in the fall. We're looking forward to that.
I think that there's honestly a great need and opportunity for a middle of the road. You know, I mean, listen, I realize it's a presidential election season. It's totally crazy. It feels like everyone is like, you know, the partisanship is ruling everything. But actually, I think a lot of people are sick of that. I think that there's an opportunity for, you know, regardless of whoever wins in November, that there's an opportunity for a conversation about, you know, sensible policies that large majorities of Americans can support about what goes on in schools. And I think rather than thinking about everything as like a partisan death battle, that there is a great opportunity for funders who are interested in sort of the future of civics and democracy to support efforts to come together and find common ground on what should be happening in our public schools. And so I hope that our report can be part of those conversations and help us think about, okay, well, what is the path forward here that makes education better for all Americans?
There's a soundbite if I've ever heard one.
That's what I was going for.
He's so good at that.
I could kind of see the gears turning, like, I got to land this plane.
I was like, how am I going to end this sentence?
we'll put that on your campaign bumper sticker later.
No? Right.
My gosh. No, I found the report fascinating. I read every page of it. I encourage people, I'll include links, obviously, when we share out the full podcast in April, we'll include the link to it again. It'll still be relevant, as you said, Morgan, clear through this presidential election. And this is just a great way, I think, to help bring more light than heat. If that's a cliche, I think it's a useful one. But the report is Searching for Common Ground, Widespread Support for Public Schools, but Substantial Partisan Divides About Teaching Contested Topics, with the lead authors here, Anna and Morgan. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you again for listening to our podcast at Human Restoration Project. I hope this conversation leaves you inspired and ready to start making change. If you enjoyed listening, please consider leaving us a review on your favorite podcast player. Plus, find a whole host of free resources, writings, and other podcasts all for free on our website, humanrestorationproject.org. Thank you.